You're listening to Dateline New Haven with Paul Bass and his guest, Jonathan Wharton.
Well, welcome to the inaugural Dark Ages version of Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make New Haven tick. Well, we're all sheltering in place, folks, even if it's not the law yet. But I'm pleased that through the magic of station manager Harry Drose, we're going to be able to continue this program, this daily program, Dateline New Haven. And what better guest for the first remote version than a man who lives and breathes tech and is always about three decades or so ahead of the rest of us, Jonathan Wharton. Jonathan, thank you for coming on today and making time to be on Dateline New Haven.
Thank you, Paul. I mean, it was partly my fault here with my Skype account, so I'm glad at least we're able to figure out the Facebook.
Well, Jonathan wears a lot of hats. He's an assistant professor of, is it assistant professor of political science?
I got promoted.
Associate professor at Southern Kent State University. He's helming the creation of a mayoral archives that's going to be an amazing resource for the community. He's former town chair of the New Haven Republican Town Committee. And he is also a columnist for Connecticut News Junkie. You can find his columns linked to on The Independent because they're so good. We want to make sure you read them. And he's written a book about Cory Booker. And that's just part of it. And he was on the City Plan Commission. Yep. So, Jonathan, great to have you on this morning.
Thank you for having me on, Paul.
I wanted to start by asking the obvious. This is the day of coronavirus. This is the era when we're all now starting living in isolation. And I take it you're working from home.
I am. In fact, I'm finishing my midterm grading.
So what does that mean? Are you conducting your classes? Are you having chats with your students? How much are you working, more or less the same?
It's very awkward right now because actually it's midterms. It's actually, you know, it's midterm season, and right now this week we're on spring break. So officially next week we're going to go to transfer everything to doing online, and that includes doing WebEx for our classes.
How many classes do you teach, Jonathan?
Right now this semester I have four. So it's a matter of how do we – it's been a lot of coordinating, Paul. It's kind of been interesting, especially for me since I'm in charge of doing the internship programs for my department. And so for a lot of students, unfortunately, their internships have either been suspended because of the virus, or they're continuing on remotely from their homes. So I've actually been in an email chain with my dean and my chairman even today on sorting out what do we do with our students, especially the ones who are trying to graduate. So it's a lot of stuff in academia we're still trying to sort out. I don't know if you heard about the graduations now not taking place for May for UConn.
I did hear that. I was in the Independent this morning. That was sad. I know the kids are sad about that. You don't get to graduate right of passage.
Absolutely. And a lot of my students have been tweeting back and forth about this. But the reality is that this is the era that we're in right now for this spring semester. So initially the idea was to do everything online for the next 2 to 3 weeks after spring break, but now they're talking about, you know, officially doing everything for the semester online now.
And I noticed from the president of the system that it said at least through the end of the semester.
Right.
This coronavirus might come in two waves with a powerful second wave that may be tougher on young people than this one is. So, Jonathan, you were ready for this moment because you've been preaching for a long time, taking more of higher education work online.
Right.
And so you have one class where you work with students who have internships.
Right.
Are the other three your traditional do the reading, let's talk about it in class?
Correct. So it's interesting. With the internship class, at least, we already do it a big exchange over email, right, because we meet monthly. And we do everything remotely already online. So I've already been used to doing that, and that's exactly what I'm trying to sort out with my deans and chairmen, to do things as progressively as possible, smoothly as possible between everything. For the upper-level classes, that's going to be a big transition because, you know, we meet weekly, but we do everything in person. As a matter of fact, we usually have guest speakers coming in. We had John Rowland, as a matter of fact, in class a couple weeks ago. So
how did that go?
It was very interesting, very enlightening, because I purposely
tried. He's great with young people.
Absolutely.
John Rowland, I've always found, can connect to young people. He's very young at heart.
Absolutely, and he related very
well. He's the former governor. Yeah.
Right, our former governor. So I always try to get, matter of fact, I was coordinating a lot of our lawmakers to come in and talk with class. As a matter of fact, you'd like this, Paul. We were supposed to have Gary Winfield and Joe Markley.
State senators. He used to do a show on WNHH left and right.
I try to get them to class, come to class, if not every year, every other year. So that's the kind of class that I'm used to doing, where we have public officials coming in, discuss and debate things out. We were even working things out with the delegation from New Haven, some of the lawmakers to come into class for that, in the New Haven area to come in. So I don't know how I'm going to have to completely reformat now a class like that where we're usually talking with public officials after reading a number of books and sources on what state and local government is. For my U.S. government class, which is a far larger class, I mean, that's 40-plus students, that's going to definitely have to go in WebEx in some kind of format. And you're dealing with students who are mostly freshmen and sophomores, and that's going to require a lot of coordinating, a lot of changing. So to be frank with you, a lot of my colleagues were doing a lot of this. Even we did WebEx seminars last week for us in terms of how do we coordinate and figure things out. It's a learning curve. And it's not that I'm against it. I totally get it. But I think right now to be thrown into this now, it's going to be, you know, quite a change for us.
So U.S. government, you have more than 40 students.
Right.
Are you WebEx, I'm ignorant about this, is that a platform?
It is a platform where we do everything online. As you know, we're doing things right now, at least on camera, and speaking with the entire class. So I got to figure out.
So does everyone, how do people raise their hand?
Right.
Like, how do people speak? Seriously.
Well, it is. I mean, what they do is that they have to have, that's a good question, because I've asked these questions to the techs over and over again. They have to, they already have their mics already muted. So they'd have to unmute it to participate. So you can imagine with 40 students, you know, that's going to be requiring a lot of refereeing, a lot of, you know, discussion points. And I'm one who likes to write a lot on the board in terms of a lot of students' ideas, right? Because I don't traditionally lecture all the time. I put down all these ideas on the board and we discuss them out. So now I'm going to have to completely reformat how I teach a class using WebEx.
So how will you put the, on WebEx?
Yeah.
Is there a part that has a Blackboard that you could throw what they've written up?
No, there isn't. I mean, I'm going to have to find a way of discussing out some of the ideas and presenting, you know, what they have to say and what I have to say in some kind of way. So it's, as a matter of fact, I've been in touch with the department secretary for me to get a microphone. So it's not just through the laptop. So hopefully everybody can hear what I have to say and we can contribute some kind of fashion. There is another format that's interesting to WebEx. You can imagine, Paul, for a seminar, not even a seminar, for a lecture, you know, hall class style, where you're dealing with 100, 200 students. Thankfully, my department doesn't have anything like that. They chop up the classes into, you know, groups, into teams, where it might be more like 20 or 30 students, you know, chopped up in different seminars to do this kind of format. So it's challenging.
So, Jonathan, what about, in old day radio, people called in.
Yeah.
We have found out, and this isn't going to work right now when we're virtual, but if Armageddon ever ends and we go back in the studio,
right?
We actually found that on Facebook Live, when people type in questions, it works better than phone calls.
Right.
We can get to the questions. We can see them up there. Other listeners, viewers can respond to each other there, and you have a permanent record. Do you think you might go to a case, I don't know if WebEx can accommodate this.
Actually, it
where
does.
Students can post their comments.
Correct. You can do both, where students can type in and respond. And so that is another format that we're also being trained on, is to do the live kind of commenting. So that could be helpful, too. I know a lot of students sometimes prefer that, as a matter of fact, which I totally get, because then they're not interrupting. They're allowing the conversation to just take place more freely. And let's face it, for a lot of our students, they're very savvy with typing in. That kind of format. So that's something as well that requires even more training too to do that simultaneously.
And I know from from experience hosting, it makes it freer.
Right.
It's sometimes hard to keep everybody in the same conversation. Two people answer each other, you right. and your guest, or you'll be lecturing or having someone in, and you'll be talking one topic when something's going on another topic, then you're getting back to that. It is. It's fun. It's exciting, and it is a crazy free-for-all.
It is. It can be. And I brought up the question. I think you're going to like this one, Paul. I brought up with the techies last week at our university, what do we do about attendance? Because, you know, the only thing you can tell online is who's chimed in on the chat and the conversation. But does it really keep track of it? Because do I begin the class opening with doing attendance, seeing who's muted, who's not muted, who's actually on, who's actually paying attention, right? That's going to be the problem. How do we differentiate that between the students? And there's really no way of monitoring that except for just following who's in the chat room to begin with. So those that's some of the challenges I have to obviously deal with. And look, I'm very much a traditionalist. I like as many people participating as possible. But to do this, you know, remotely, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be very interesting.
It is.
Yeah.
And I know you're going to do it well. And we're talking with Jonathan Wharton, Southern Connecticut State University's politics professor, an active member of the New Haven and Connecticut Republican parties, and a regular guest here on Dateline New Haven at 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenindependent.org. Jonathan, have you been sheltering in place? Have you been staying home in City Point?
I've been staying, actually I'm house sitting as a matter of fact. So I've been, you know, staying here and there. Actually, I was seeing my friends in Madison earlier, over the weekend. So I've been staying at Point for the most part. I'll tell you one thing I do miss is, you know, I'm used to working in the library. You mentioned the library archives, and I was, you know, trying to prep up for a conference and eventually an article about, you know, Mayor DeStefano's years and his elections. So for me, I can only do so much work remotely on a project like that, because as you already know.
So is that being put on held?
Yeah, it is, unfortunately. You know, I was supposed to present the New England Political Science Association. We just found out yesterday, in fact, that they are going to not have their conference next month. And we had a couple of students from our department ready to present their research, and I was supposed to present my own. So it's a delay now, which is unfortunate, because I've been working, you know, hard on that, as you know, and my students have had their own projects to do. So we can only do so much. And actually, I'm on the executive board for the New England Political Science Association, so we've had to debate this back and forth. Do we have the conference, not have the conference? We've been discussing this back and forth over email for the last week. But obviously, in light of the fact that the conference is bringing hundreds of people, we couldn't continue that. And the hotel is...
We're kind of entering a new age. It's reminding me, Jonathan, of after 9/11. Yeah. Not that it's the same issues. Mm-hmm. But in the first days of a new reality, we're having trouble understanding what this is going to mean.
Right.
Threats we don't completely understand where they're going to come from. And we were worried about biological threats like anthrax back in 9/11, even though this is coming more from nature than from man-made threats.
Right.
But how are we going to live? How are we going to keep safe? Are we going to be okay?
Right.
And do we ever get back to normal, the way normal used to be defined? So I'm finding that I did go to a funeral yesterday. It was a tough decision.
Mm.
We buried my brother.
Yeah.
And we weren't sure we were going to do it, but we did a 10-people graveside. We were nervous about the health implications.
Sure.
We're not going to do other things Jews do, like sit shiva with people in each other's houses. No prayer services every day like you normally have.
Right.
How about for you? What are you doing and what are you not doing?
Well,
that you did in your daily life?
One thing that I really miss, and I know you respect this an awful lot about my research, is I'm accustomed to going to town hall and city hall meetings, you know, and not just in New Haven, right? I mean, you know, I get around a lot in New Haven, but like in the Valley, you know, I go to an awful lot of those meetings, and I was very fortunate this semester to work with a few graduate students, came up with an awesome project to go to all these various public meetings and forums. We were supposed to go to, you know, city planning and zoning board meetings in various towns and cities, and we had already gone to a few, even in the Valley. And now, obviously, we can't. And I know my graduate students are very much concerned about this. What do we do in terms of this as a project? But for me, I'm used to going to meetings every week, right, in these different towns and cities for either research or just curiosity purposes, or knowing what is going on. And then what I love, and my grad students enjoyed this, I know you'd like this, Paul, oftentimes after the meetings, we would go out for a drink with the public officials, you know, at a bar or what. And the
That's
grad students
fun.
Love that. Yeah. They couldn't stop talking about, wow, this is great to talk to these selectmen and these state representatives, you know, and yet what do we do now?
What do we do now?
I don't know. Like, this is... I guess I'm sure you heard Derby is going to be experimenting with this virtual town hall meeting style of doing everything online and doing what you spoke about in terms of, you know, participating remotely by typing and writing in ideas. So I guess that's the new format. My grad students are going to have to figure out what do we do about this. And actually, they're very excited because they wanted to present their findings on NPR. We had set things up for doing that in May. With Lucy's...
They'll be able to. I was just on NPR this morning.
We're yeah.
using Skype. It worked.
Yeah,
so, Jonathan, I love the way you get people interested and caring about local government. It matters more than any other level in our lives, and you have a gift for that.
I live...
And so I hope you're making it through. We're talking about that on Dateline New Haven, WNHH 103.5 FM, live stream at newhavenindependent.org. So what? Oh, by the way, there was a Parking Authority meeting done by phone. So Tom Breen, our reporter, covered that by phone. I don't think the public knew about that. They're going to have to figure out how to include the public. The Board of Alders did live stream their meeting. City Plan Commission they used to sit on. They're going to next week do theirs live as well. I think there's going to be an important learning curve of how we inform the public, because there are public noticing requirements.
Right.
Like, we're not going to be sticklers of the media right away. We're going to ask the question. But we didn't really find out whether it was – well, City Hall was officially closed on Monday. So did the Parking Authority have the 24-hour notice about how you could go?
Right.
I think we're going to be relaxing rules at all levels of government. Starting with the federal government, I know they're going to be relaxing rules on what hospitals – regulation in the state about insurers and that kind of thing. So I hope that works. One of the last meetings that took place in person in New Haven was at 200 Orange Street, the government office building. Was the Republican town meeting last Thursday night.
Right.
You guys all showed up. Did you stay 6 feet away from each other?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, I think you noticed that from the pictures at the meeting that we did it.
That's right. You shook hands with somebody. Yeah.
Everybody shook hands and everybody gave hugs. And so that was difficult, right? Because at the time last week, it wasn't necessarily enforced or really thought of directly, right? It was kind of secondary.
I think that was the first day I stopped hugging people.
Yeah. It's,
it hurts.
Look, Paul, it's tough. I mean, how do you do this, right? I mean, I even met up with a couple of advisees on Monday for a drink, and that was the last day before the bars close. And yeah, we gave hugs. I'll admit it openly. But what do you do? I mean, it's difficult to carry that on. And you know, somebody like me, I'm a backslapper kind of person. You know, how do you end that? It's very difficult to do that. But you're right. At that meeting, there was a lot of that going on, and we had a big transition, obviously, with the RTC.
Right, you have a new town chair.
Right, we have.
You used to be the town chair, then, and you were opening up the party to lots of groups.
Right, right.
And that it's hard to get the numbers. Right. You guys are still only 4% of the registered voters in New Haven, 2,500.
Right.
But you care a lot, and there are a lot of people who are not Republican in New Haven, who have been rooting for a long time for the Republican Party to get strong again, so that we have competition in New Haven of ideas and choices at election day. You guys valiantly put up some candidates. It's hard to be a Republican in Democratic New Haven. I think it's the official political religion in the charter. I'm not sure that thou shalt be a Democrat unless you have a note from your spiritual advisor.
Right.
So now you have a new chair, John Carlson. Mm-hmm. He's been a longtime City Point activist, cares about his community. He's been a public school teacher for decades. What is the significance of this change in leadership?
I think, and you, by the way, I have to give credit to, you know, to your new writer, Emily, and what she wrote last week about what took place that night. And I'm glad that at least she mentioned what the DTC doesn't do. I mean, you know, it's not publicly known when they have their meetings, when they decide to make the decisions, but at least for us on the RTC, you know, we do publicize, we do advertise. Yeah, we even still had a meeting last week. But what I emphasize in that article, I'm glad she mentioned, is the fact that each chairman who's run, really, since I have tried to find ways of saying what they're going to emphasize. So I think you know that, you know, Richter, for example, you know, who's the previous...
Fasano.
Mm-hmm. The previous chairman was really more emphasizing getting people just to run, right?
Oh, Jeff Weiss. Jeff Weiss was the previous chairman, not Victor Fasano.
Oh, I'm sorry, before me, prior to
Vic was a long time ago. Yeah.
Right, right. he was. But, you know, he was all
But
about,
he's still around.
Right, he is still around. But he was one of those people who just said, look, we just need to fill seats. Get somebody to run for office. Whereas I emphasize more, as you know, more media relations, connecting more with people like you, getting the word out that we did exist, getting social media together, getting a website all together.
You also drafted a platform, Jonathan, which is the first I've seen by a local party, period.
Right.
Except maybe the older version of the Green Party around 2000. I'm not sure if they had it written out. Mm-hmm. And you also recruited people to serve on boards and commissions.
Right.
Because non-Democrats have to serve on boards and commissions.
Right.
They can be independents, of which whom we have many in New Haven. Right. But there's been good faith by, like, former Mayor Tony Harp, who's a Democrat,
right,
to get Republicans on those boards, but you got to get us the bodies.
Right.
Gotten us some good people.
Correct. And actually, that's another thing that we're trying to work out right now, is because there's still all these vacancies in some of these commissions and boards, but we have a new mayor, a new staff, and I'm still some degree kind of behind the scenes trying to coordinate some of that. So you can imagine the bureaucracy and the politics even around that. But I will say, Justin Elliker has been very open. He and I have met and spoken about this and figuring more people to fill out more seats. But that was a big emphasis under my term. And then, of course, you know, we did a little fundraising, as you know. I mean, yeah, we raised some money when I was chairman. And then I think under Jeff Weiss, who was the previous chairman, you know, he really found ways of getting as many candidates running for, you know, General Assembly seats to also to at least qualify for public financing for the citizen election.
That was, I thought, a big achievement on Jeff Weiss's part.
Big one.
Was that you were able to access a system that Republicans generally don't approve of, which is public financing, right? But it's there for everybody, so everyone gets the right to take advantage of it. And in this case, helps the Republicans in New Haven because it gives them more money to campaign on. Jeff was very successful.
He was.
In
half
getting
a dozen candidates
qualifying for the citizens' election program.
All six seats. It was very impressive. I mean, a half dozen. Not just one or two, but a half dozen. And I have to tell you, Paul, I know we never have a chance to talk about this, but it was emphasized how that is, you know, it's groundbreaking. And it was mentioned at the State Central dinners a while back at the meetings, because, you know, I'm on State Central for the Republican Party, for the State Party Committee, and it was said over and over again that, you know, Jeff really made some great headway in doing that as chairman. I think that with John Carlson, and I'm sure you're going to get this out of him next week when you talk with him, he emphasized more the direct connection, more grassroots, more door knocking. You know, he's been accustomed to doing that since he's run for Alder twice. He's run for the General Assembly seat as well. So he's very good at doing the door knocking, the phone banking, having more of a presence at least. So I think each chair has found pathways of doing things differently than the next. And I know at least with John, he's already emphasized that he wants to have more of a presence again with the media. But that wasn't quite Jeff's emphasis.
No, he hated the media. So we're off.
Well, I wouldn't say he hated, but let's just say
he said we were all out to get him, which we were not. Yeah.
Well, let's just say he was very particular on how the messaging should be sent out. So let me spin it that way. John and I have already spoken, and I know you can respect this, about strategies of dealing with that again. And I'm certainly on board with helping him out in that endeavor. So whatever I can do to help out, I will continue doing that.
Well, we wish you great luck on that. And we're talking about that on Dateline New Haven with the man of many hats, so many of them political, Jonathan Wharton. On 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenindependent.org. What does it mean to be a Republican in New Haven now? I know that you're not for tax hikes, right? Are you against the proposed tax hike that Mayor Elliker has put in, the 3.6%?
Nothing has actually been said in terms of how the RTC is feeling about it yet. I haven't heard any real discussion about it so far, so I can't...
Well, to be fair, we got a coronavirus
crisis
going on right now. It's very hard to weigh in.
It is, and not to mention, I think, as you know, the public forums, because, you know, the workshops are so important for the alders and how they discuss things out publicly. You know, I think we as an RTC have always been concerned about tax hikes. We were initially, still remained at least, about the issues concerning what happened a couple of years back under Tony Harp and that 11% increase. I imagine we still have our concerns about that as it relates right now to Elliker.
Obviously, the big question is, do we rethink government? If people widely agree that tax hikes are a bad idea in New Haven, including many people who are support state and federal tax hikes, but feel in New Haven the government can't print the money.
Right.
So that if you keep, and we're limited in how much we can tax, and because 60% of our property is tax exempt, the other 40% pay more than they normally would. There's a feeling, right or wrong, and I'm not an expert, that at some point if you keep raising taxes, you're not going to get more money because people won't be able to afford that and you'll have fewer people paying. What are the alternatives? We've cut a lot over government over the years. I'm sure anyone could find some waste here, a position to get rid of there. But in terms of what the people around the government are really struggling with, what are the big ways to save money? Are there functions, Jonathan, that government takes on in New Haven that maybe municipal government can't take on anymore? We're going to keep collecting trash, right? We can't go to every other week or it'll be public health crisis. We have parks, right? We want to have parks.
So have one cops, of the things I've been emphasizing,
what can we not do?
You know, since I've been on the City Plan Commission, which, you know, my last meeting was last month, I think, as you know, is to say, and I know the RTC is definitely on board with this, is to emphasize more economic development, find a better way of streamlining and ending a lot of the red tape in the bureaucracy of these projects where it takes them so many commissions and board approval. And it takes such an extended, longer time. And the paperwork is just, you know, amazingly difficult and such a burdensome process for developers and investors to really come into a city like New Haven and to do this kind of thing. It's so antiquated and problematic. I will say that, at least with the Elker administration, they've been stressing over and over again to find a better way. He ran on this, I think you know this, Paul, of saying, look, we need to get more investors to consider New Haven and to make it a more friendly place for developers, investors to come into New Haven. So that's no...
That debate has gotten very complicated, right, as you know. City Plan Commission, while you're on it, was involved for years in a very democratic, right, open process to change zoning in commercial corridors, right, and neighborhoods. The Whaley Corridor, Dixwell, Kimberly Avenue, and I believe Congress Center, if I'm not mistaken, and Grand Avenue, excuse me. And after years of work, you put together a process you thought that would make it easier for people to invest, and not so much the big investor for, right, out of town, but the local person who, because of antiquated zoning laws, back then we thought everything should be designed for the car and not too dense and pulled back from the street. If we get rid of some of those rules that nobody feels needs to be in place, mm-hmm, anyway, it'd be quicker and easier for people to develop. But it all got shot down. At the 11th hour, right, people in every neighborhood but, was it Whaley, mm-hmm, convinced lawmakers to shut it down, saying it wasn't democratic. Did you support those changes? Do you see them coming back?
Oh, I absolutely supported it. And I made it known that, and certainly the Republicans were, the RTC was all behind it as well. We were definitely supportive of those changes in terms of what you're saying with the commercial zoning, especially, and making the corridors viable. We were hopeful of that for, Grand Street and even for Dixwell. But as we know, it was very, very difficult. The challenge really came from, and I think you know this, not even so much the community residents, but even those people who are outside of it. Mostly, as you know, the Yale, legal clinic and what they were emphasizing.
It was Legal Aid.
Legal Aid.
New Haven Legal Assistance Association. Right. So they as a community organizer position, yeah.
Right. So they were the ones leading the charge and really emphasizing, communicating what was taking place. I think that I wouldn't be surprised in the next year or two, there might be a round two. And I think from what is being talked about among some of the staffers, and I wouldn't disagree with it, is, and I emphasize this at a couple of meetings, having more competition between maybe, the neighbors who want it and the neighbors who don't. I mean, I know that there's a big interest in a project like this in the Hill, which, as you know, would be a great area for.
So if Dixwell doesn't have it, let's go on Kimberly Square, where in 2014, when Tony Hart took office, brought in a consultant, took everybody in a ride first through Kimberly Avenue in Congress, right, saying that's where we're going to start, and then that didn't get included.
It didn't, and I think there'd be an interest in revisiting this. And I'm thinking, especially down the road, for what's going on around Union Station, right? Because that could be a great and viable area for...
Right, the old Church Street South, if they, right, get that built. And
among and, other things, right? I mean, there are all those super blocks, blocks that are like 2, 3, 4 times bigger than a normal block, that you could really try and really reconfiguring and tying back in as it relates to the downtown the Hill project. I think there's a lot of things that you could do around that area. So what we're trying to emphasize, just as Republicans, but just in general, is find initiatives like this so you can get more property, more tax rolls, on there. So you're not having, as you said, the 60% business of property that's not taxable, so you can actually increase, the amount of possible land that could be taxed, so that you're not having this emphasis of where you're relying just on, Yale New Haven Hospital or Yale University to give, payment in lieu of taxes. I think there's got to be a better way of emphasizing this. From what we're hearing so far from the Elker administration, I don't think they're against anything like that, but it would be great to go back and revisit what the plans could be to make things a little bit easier for developers and investors to consider projects like that.
Well, it's always easy to talk to you, Jonathan Wharton. So it's a pleasure having you on my first virtual version of Dateline New Haven on WNHH-FM. Jonathan, best of luck.
Thank you, Paul.
To the online-only teaching world of Southern Connecticut. Best of luck helping the New Haven Republican Party grow and offer an alternative in New Haven politics, which people of all ideological persuasions are rooting for you to succeed in that endeavor. And thanks, as always, for being a regular guest here on the program. I'd love to hear what you're up to and what you're thinking.
Well, thank you always for the invite. I appreciate it, Paul.
And I want to thank Harry Droz, the miracle man behind the controls, WNHA station manager, who is shepherding us in to the virtual age of radio. Thanks for joining us, folks. This is Paul Bass saying we're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience, performing I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free from the group CD, A Plea for Peace. I'm wishing you to say fly free with us all day and all night here at WNHHFM, New Haven's home for Community Radio.